I'd like to say that this evening is graduation. What do I mean? We spent a good part of over a year in one aspect of what Rabbi Yisrael Salanta calls Limud HaMusa, the learning of Musa. The first aspect is the Chochmah, Chochmas HaMusa. We learned a lot about Bitochon. Different aspects, different angles, different levels, different aces, different interferences, a lot of different things. We hit it from many different sides. But it was like information. The second type of Musa, the second category of Musa that Rabbi Yisrael Salanta speaks about is Limud HaMusa. And Limud HaMusa be Spilus. That means internalizing the Chochmah. We know a lot about a certain topic, a certain mida, a certain hanhoga, in this case, bitochon. But now with all the information that we have, the knowledge, the insight, even the nature of some of the problems, some of the challenges, some of the defenses, but all of these things are chokhmah, intellectual. Now we want to internalize the intellectual, to take it, as the Bali Musa used to say, from the head to the heart, which is the longest distance in the world. And that's really what the Yisrael Salanta calls Limud HaMusa B'Spilus. So I thought we would spend some time on focusing on that. And I thought that there are two ways to begin that. One thing here that we published many years ago. It was thousands and thousands of these items were given out and people use them. You find people have them in the Talazekel, and it's called 10 Thoughts to Help Strengthen Your Bitochon.
And you gave it to us the first or second.
Really? Okay.
You see that?
I wasn't lying. Okay. So now the idea here is, but the idea is not the information. This is information. We know this information. In fact, if you read it once, you know the information. If you read it twice, you know it better. If you read it three times, you might even remember it. But the trick is to internalize it, to go over it again. And in going over it, it's not just reading it, but it's picturing it, and we'll discuss more. So I thought we would start with that. So let me pass this around. Then, I thought we would, I don't know if we'll get to that today, but then continue with some of the other things. I'm going to leave these things here with your permission.
Sure.
If anyone wants to take it home. Basically, there's a lot of chokhmah here. There's a lot of information about bitochon. But there's also a lot of opportunity to internalize it. Information about internalizing it emotionally and some ways of internalizing emotionally. One of them, which I think is a very popular way, is based on the Chodesh HaLevavos. We'll get to it. I don't know if I'll find it when I have to, I guess. But similar to the one that we have. Anyway, let's start with this and then we'll see where we go. So, the principle involved here is not knowledge and information, but it's picturing and repetition. Let me give two examples to how this works. One example I wrote in one of the books that I wrote, and my children made me take it out. So I'll give that one first. Okay, that was probably the most powerful one, but it wasn't appropriate for, you know, today you have to write, when you publish anything, you have to be thinking about 1,000 diverse audiences. You know, if you want to reach people, not just one political or one, you know, ideological group, you got to be so careful, because anything you say wrong, nah, you know, good, finish, it's all over. Live in a very difficult world, but that's a different discussion. Anyway, so one of the things I pointed out was like this. Someone comes to your door, and they're telling you such a sad, sad story of suffering and tragedy and challenge and difficulty and this. And you're listening, and you feel a little bit, you know, you feel sorry for them. You may dig into your pocket and take out a couple of bucks, you know, and try to be mishtatif with the need, with the tzara and help. But that's where it stops. Once you do that, you move on to the next thing. Okay, now, you go to a movie, and you see the same story portrayed by Hollywood. The same story with the guy, with the told you, with the this, with the that. And you're sitting there crying like a baby. What's this? This is Hollywood. This is fiction. This is nonsense. You know, and this is real life. You saw, you touched the flesh and blood that's going through this Tzara. And over here, some guy came up with a good idea, a script, and I'm crying like a baby. Something's wrong. And the Torah says something is not wrong. Because it's really, Hollywood understands a very simple principle. That there is a way to get from the knowledge and the awareness to the heart. And they use a number of tricks. One trick they use is imagery. You see the whole story. You didn't just hear it and you have to imagine it. You're watching it happen. You see the details. Color added so much to that. The black and white was, okay, something. Color and dramatic color and three-dimensional, I don't know what they have in the movies today, but three-dimensional color and I remember there was a goofy years ago, you had to put on glasses, special glasses, I don't know if they had whatever. So, wow. And then there's music to tug at the heartstrings. The music is, who knows how many millions of dollars they paid to get the right music for the right word, for the right nuance, for the right string of the heart in order to get the message in. And this whole thing together makes the fiction 100, 1,000 times more reality than the reality of that poor guy telling his real life story. You know, and even if he was crying at the door, it doesn't affect me as much. So this is the power of music and a picture. Now, I give another example, which this one they allowed me to print. And that is, I discovered many years ago when I lived in Los Angeles that I would drive and I had to go to a meeting or something and I would listen to music and, you know, Jewish music and then park, shut the car, go to my meeting, come back 2 hours later. And lo and behold, it happened to me maybe 100 times, maybe more, I can't count. I'm putting the key, those days we had keys, you know, put the key in the door, and I'm humming a tune. Put the key in the ignition, and it's the same tune that was there a few hours ago, holding it the same place that I left it off. What does that mean? To me, what that means is that music penetrates the subconscious. So in my conscious mind, this was completely forgotten. I wasn't thinking about it. I was busy. I was occupied. I was interested or disinterested in what was going on. But the association with the car triggers something in the subconscious because that was deeply buried in the subconscious because it entered through a vehicle that was more dramatic, that was more more than just a physical more than just a physical word, or maybe even a picture. So we see that there's a way to the heart, to the subconscious, which is far more powerful than just thinking and hearing. So I say the same thing. These are techniques that Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, not going to the movies and listening to music in the car, but these are techniques that Rabbi Yisrael Salanter used to advocate. And I thought that what we would do is to go through these, as many of these as we can go through, and try to see how we could picture them and broaden them in a way that it could have an impact. And then the suggestion would be that a person who truly wishes to ensure that the Midas HaBitochon becomes part of him and remains with him has to go over these things on a regular basis. Maybe even every day, maybe a couple times a week, but something to really make it stick. Okay, one, Hashem is in complete control of everything that happens to me, even things that seem insignificant to me. I can read those words. I guess I speak English, so I know what they mean. But I know what they mean, but what does it mean to me? And pictures, I don't know how we could apply music to this unless you sing it with a, you know, say it with a tune if you're musically inclined. What? Really? Oh, so you kind of make up a niggin for it and you know, say it with a tune. But Hashem is in control, complete control of everything that happens to me, even things that seem insignificant to me. But in reality, if we picture some situations in life, complete control, even insignificant. Now, there's two messages over here. The complete control means in things that are significant. Sometimes significant things give us a lot of problem because there's a lot on the line. The prognosis is dismal. The doctor has given up. The business consultant says you're out of your mind. I don't know what, you know, whoever it is says that it's all over. The IRS has its say, you know, the bank has its say, whatever. Finish, it's done, it's gone, it's finished, it's all. What? And if you picture such a situation, no, what are you talking about? There's no such situation. Hashem controls everything. Hashem controls everything. And what's especially helpful is if a person can come up with a story, a scenario. Personal stories are the best because you know they're true and it evokes an emotion when you remember it because it happened to me. Stories from others are less effective, but also in this particular vein of what we're talking about, I have a story. This one didn't happen to me. I have stories that happened to me too, but this is one that comes to mind that happened to a friend of mine. I had gone back, I was already living here, I had gone back to Los Angeles for a wedding, and the Sheva Brochus was the next day, so I stayed for the Sheva Brochus. At the Sheva Brochus, the family that was giving the Sheva Brochus for a friend, the son, who was the friend of the Chosin, he's in business with his father, and he informed me that they have a terrible, terrible sorrow. They had been working for 6 months or a year. I forgot exactly. I forgot whether it was $1 million and 6 months or a year and a half $1 million, whatever, or something like that's the difference. You know, they've been working diligently to try to get a certain loan from the bank. And they're really, the future of their business depended on it. They were expanding and they really needed this, you know, and they had spent either $500,000 or $1 million in lawyer fees and everything they had to do in order to get it. It was a very complicated business transaction, and they're working on it for months and months and months. The final decision is being made tomorrow morning, but there was a problem. The father owned some buildings, high-rise buildings. And that would be collateral for this major loan that they wanted to get. The problem is that he had two partners in those buildings, and the partners refused to subordinate, which means the bank would have to come in the second position. And banks are not ready to come in the second position on a big loan. They don't know how much the buildings will be worth. If they have to foreclose, then the first mortgage gets its, and what they get whatever's left over. They weren't interested, and they were told by their business advisors that, because the whole time he was trying to get these partners to agree, they refused to agree, it's all over. The deal is over, 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 over. Forget about it. It's impossible. The bank will never agree. It's against all policies. It's against all seichel for them to do such a thing. And the guy says his business is in derer. If this happens, he doesn't know what he's going to do. They invested so much time and effort and money, and they need it so desperately. So I told him, I says, listen, I have an idea for you. The yeshiva where I was involved, was that we were there for 10 years, and I had left already a few years, was in dire need of a building, of a new building. Their building was, they had two, they had a girls' school, a boys' school, had two facilities, and it was terrible trouble. So I said, go speak to your father, and tell your father that if this deal goes through, then as soon as you have the cash available, you'll donate $1 million towards the new building. So he goes and speaks to his father. With him, it was easier. He was more ready to do such a thing. And his father agreed. Fine. Okay. So, wow. Beautiful. Now what? Now what? I knew that not only was $1 million for the yeshiva and $1 million for them and the future of their business on the line, but there was something else on the line. Because if this doesn't work, these people, especially the father, the son was more of a yeshiva educated, you know, but the father was from the older generation. And like, what's going on here? And they had never given $1 million before. This was the early stages of their business. Since then, they've given us many, many millions, but and many to others. But then, so what's going to be? Kids, I didn't know what. I says their whole Yiddishkeit is on the line. Or certainly the farm. I had to leave to fly to San Diego to meet someone early in the morning. It was like a 20-minute flight from LAX to San Diego. And on the plane, I'm saying Dylan. Gotta help me on this one, you know what I mean? These guys, it's, forget the money, a kapora the geld, but the whole Yiddishkeit is on the line. If this doesn't work, I offered $1 million and he wouldn't help me. Either he can't, which would be the ultimate tragedy, or he doesn't want to, that's a tragedy enough, like what's going on? Or he doesn't want my money? Are you talking? That can't be. Well, what's going on? But kids, I remember the story. There was a story with the Blujeva Rebbe. Blujeva Rebbe was a big tzaddik. He came, I guess, in the middle of the war years, and somebody came to Ellis Island, and they were sending him back with his family because they said he was diseased and he couldn't enter the country. You know, those days he went back, it could be all over. So he panicked, and he snuck off Ellis Island, I don't know how, and he gets to the Blujeva Rebbe. He says, Rebbe, you must promise me that they're going to let my family in. You must promise me. And Rebbe, so he's going to grab his mic. He says, okay, don't worry, you and your family will be. Then the Rebbe says, same situation as I had. What am I going to do? And the Rebbe did better than I did. He went over to the wall they described, and he said, standing there, the whole Sefer Tehillim. The whole Sefer Tehillim. Sure enough, the next day, they let this guy in. His family made it. I said, Rebbeinu Shalala. So much is on the line. You gotta let me. I had no choice. I had, and that's what the Rebbe, that's what they quote. I had to promise this guy he would go out of his mind. But now again, I said, I felt I had to say what I said, but I gotta help me. Sure enough, to this day, nobody understands why or how the bank approved the mortgage. The bank approved it, and they grew to a massive business. You know, but so again, how does it say here? Hashem is in complete control of everything that happens to me. There's nothing he can't control, even things that seem insignificant to me. And here is the second picture that we have to have. And again, each person has his own picture, so I can't really, my pictures to you are just words, you know what I mean? To be there, at least memories and you know, firsthand, or at least this one is an almost firsthand situation, I was involved in it. But just even little things that happened to me. I just had last Shabbos I spent the Shabbos in St. Louis, not the Shabbos, the previous Shabbos. This beautiful yeshiva there, they have a massive building that, the likes of which, I don't think there's another moisid in the country or maybe in the world that has such a building. Metzia, they got it, it was Nisim and Eflois. Anyway, so I'm there and I've spoken a number of times in this, and I had to go from where the dining area down to the Bismedrish, and there's a flight of steps, and you go down to the Bismedrish. The last time that we went to the Bismedrish after Shalosh Shuras, they had to go speak. So one of the Rosh Hashivas there, I'm walking with him, talking, and he all of a sudden shows me, takes a turn, and walks through a ramp. A ramp that goes, I guess, you know, they have to have ramps there for disabled people. They walk through a ramp, we come down. So this structure is very strange. We're always taking the stairs, and all of us, you think, I became so old over Shabbos that I can't take the stairs anymore. You know, we got to go on the ramp. But they didn't pay attention. The next morning at 6 in the morning, I had to leave to catch an early morning flight. And they're supposed to meet me out front. So I'm schlepping my suitcase, and I see the whole of the flight of stairs. They know I could have handled the suitcase on the flight of stairs. I just went for Shabbos. It was a small suitcase you take on the plane with you. But I remember it. There's a ramp there, and my suitcase goes, you know, like dances, it goes this way and that way, you know. So I say, look at that. Hashem made this guy do something very bizarre to go on the ramp, which when the whole Shabbos were walking on the staircase, just to alert me, because I didn't know it was a ramp. It doesn't look like it, just looks like a hallway, and then it turns into a ramp. That at 6 in the morning, I shouldn't have to have that extra burden of schlepping the, picking up the suitcase and carrying it down the steps, which, you know,
also,
so
he got nachas from the suitcase. Also.
What?
on the ramp, you can knock.
That's right. That's right. You can actually do a maneuver with it. Anyway, so but the point is, even if a person sees in the little things that Hashem is with them, and in the big things, that he's in control of everything, and we picture this, that, you know, if he takes care of, if he bothers with such little things, then you know, I can count on him. And if he can handle the most absurd things and turn them around upside down and no one would believe. So those are things. Pictures are very important. And review of the picture again and again. But I have to be very careful. You can't review a picture by just, you know the story with the jokes. These people were saying the same jokes every day. So instead they assigned a number to it. You know, this is number 1, 3, 4, 5. I say 1, he laughs. I say 5, he laughs. And that doesn't work to penetrate to the heart. It's very nice, a joke. It's very nice. But it's not. To penetrate the heart, you've got to have the whole story, the whole picture again. And every time you picture that, it penetrates. Okay, that's one. Let's go to another example here. Nothing in my life can change for better or worse unless Hashem wants it. Now this, I think, is also something very, very important. That not only is Hashem in control, but he designs. He's the controller, and he's the designer. And it's not, unless he wants it, it's not going to happen. Which, what it does to me is something like this. It limits my grandiose ideas of the power that I have and focuses and rivets my power on where the power really lies. Again, nothing in my life can change for better or for worse unless Hashem wants it. So, which really means it's all about Him. It's not about me. Now, that's a very important point because we all know, Al tiftuch b'nedivim. Don't trust in the nedivim, the givers, you know, the generous people. Trust in Hashem. Where do you put yourself in that equation? Al tiftuch b'nedivim. Maybe I could trust myself. Nothing happens unless Hashem wants it. Your willpower, your cunning, your education, your physical prowess, whatever you have. If Hashem wants it, it can be. And if Hashem doesn't want it, it will be. They used to quote, I used to hear from the Rosh Hashiva, in the early days, from his father, David Leibowitz, used to say like this. He started yeshivas like the first. He was the first Rosh Yeshiva in America, in Torah Vadas, and then he started his own yeshiva, and he struggled. I mean, terrible struggles in those days. This was in the 30s. You know, so he said like this: if the Rabbeinu Shel Olam wants Torah in the world, it'll be even without me. And if the Rabbeinu Shel Olam doesn't want it, there's nothing I can do. And that realization is very, very important because it takes, first of all, it takes away a lot of stress because what are you getting stressed about? There's nothing you can do anyway. You know, the minute we hear that I can, that's like Shabbos we mentioned, you know, it takes away stress. Nothing you can do about it, so you might as well not even try. But more than that, it's all thing. It's up to him. He does everything. If he wants it, it'll be. And that doesn't mean I don't have to do my share. He commands me to do things. He tells me to do ishkadlus, but it's all going through those actions, but he can do anything. He's in total control, and it all depends on what he wants. And that's why we advocated here a few weeks ago that before anything in action that we do, we should say, Emir Hashem. Because that's what it is. After the fact, he lets us take a little credit, you know, but Emir Hashem. And again, that picture with as many pictures as we can. A picture is worth 1,000 words. A picture goes in. A picture is etched in the memory, and agav, music is also, you know, the concept of music is almost that something that went in musically, sort of haunts you. There used to be a song about that, but I'm not going to let you know that I know the words, you know. But it haunts you. It's like a melody that haunts you night and day. That's as much as I'm going to say here. It's like a melody that haunts you night and day. You hear a song, and it doesn't. Same thing. We can do that. If there's so many songs about bitochen. I mean, so many references in Sefer Tehillim, and so many modern songs have been made. And the more that those things go in, I must have mentioned here once that there was a tape originally. I heard it from Yontel Erlich. Yontel Erlich was this Yiddish ballad singer, very, very talented. And he had his last piece that he published was on Bitochen. Has six, I think, stories in his sing-song ballad, thing like this. But I must have listened to it traveling in the car about 600 times over a period of a number of years. And it's not only the words, but the music. It wasn't even much music, but, whatever it was, just stuck in my ears, and the pictures come back. And those are things that you call upon in a time of need, and that they rejuvenate themselves sometimes just at the right time. Okay. Hashem is the only source of goodness and blessing, and the only one who can affect my livelihood. Here's another thing that sometimes, when it comes to livelihood, we sort of forget about Hashem, because we think, listen, I got education, I have the right business, I have the right profession, I have the right talent set, skill sets and talent sets, and so life, that's not true. How does it say here? So he's the only source of goodness and blessing, and the only one who can affect my livelihood. That's not, I'm good in business, I'm bad in business, I'm good at my profession, I'm bad at my profession, I'm good here, I'm good. Hashem takes care of everything. And the sooner that we know that he's Pesach, is Yodecho, Umasbiya, the whole Chai Rotzei. And that's a posuk that it even says it's a special school if you say with Kavona. You open your hand, Pesach is Yodecho, Umasbiya, the whole Chai Rotzei. And this, and you satiate the will of every living creature. The will, Kol Chai Rotzen, the Machlekes, whether it refers to the Rotzen of Hashem or the Rotzen of the person, but a different Meforshim. But the whole idea that Pesach is Yodecho. So the Medrash says, it's a Medrash, Yalkut brings it, Gedoyla Parnosa Yose Mi Geula. Parnosa is even greater than Geula. Because by Geula it says Hamalach HaGoyeloisi. Sometimes Hashem sends redemption through agents, through a Malach. Parnosa, Pesach es Yodecho, you open your hand. Hashem signs the checks himself. He's Pesach es Yodecho. Think of that. He deals with it himself. The whole world he can have Shluchim. But with Parnosa, he deals with it himself. So when we think about it, he is dealing, it's not just like a general thing, it's not just like a vague edict that was made on Yom Kippur, sealed on Yom Kippur, and then given over to deliver. He takes care, he's signing all the checks, he's Masbiya Lechol Chai Rotzen, he satiates every desire that I have, and he does it himself. Thinking that, it's that picture of him, the picture of him signing the checks. Imagine noticing your checks have a signature, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And those images, those pictures, and the repetition of it, and the picturing it in the scope, and the can have a lasting or a deepening impact and penetrate the subconscious. And here again, there's so many things that are. It's really, this in itself is beautiful because it's repetitious. But the repetition is good for the point. One of the things Rabbi Yisrael Salanta emphasizes, besides what he calls tzir chushi, a picture, a sensual picture, chush means with the senses, and sosayim dolkos, and lips that are like burning with fire, like, and a nigun, and singing it. And the other thing he says is repetition. Repetition penetrates. It becomes part of me. If you say Mashi Baruch HaMoirak Hashem 90 times, so then there's a certain Shigra Delishna, you're not going to forget it. It becomes part of you. It internalizes into the subconscious. That's what happens. Repetition reaches the subconscious. So here another thing. I know that I must do my Ishtadlus. But regardless of my efforts, only Hashem can make me successful. I think that's a very important point too. Ishtablis is a chiyuv, whether it's because of Mizeas HaPechot Toich HaLechem, which means it's a curse, whether it's because Ein Soimech Al Hanes, Hashem doesn't want us to rely on miracles because He wants to be able to give us all the reward over there, not to have to use up any special schusim for miracles. Whether it's to just to create an Nesoyin that now that I'm doing Ishtadlus, it's harder that Bitochon, therefore I get more schus when I have the Bitochon, or maybe it leads me to the Bitochon because since I have to fight it now, whatever it may be. But Lemaise, after everything is said, it's a mitzvah. But Hashem does it all. The Hishtadlus and the Bitochon have nothing to do with each other. There's no connection whatsoever. Hashem takes care of everything. There's a mitzvah to do Hishtadlus. It isn't the Hishtadlus that brings the Lashon of the Mishnah, I think at the end of the Kiddushin is, it isn't the umness that enriches its practitioner. It's not the umness, it's Min HaShemayim. You know, I'll ask, why is it that certain professions seem to make more money than others? The simple, and it's only a simplistic maybe explanation is because the teva is more that way, and therefore I need less chusim to do better. In other words, if the teva is that in real estate you make more than in garbage collecting, okay? Is that true? No. You know, in real estate you make more than garbage collecting, okay? Or that if you purchase real estate, you make more than collecting the bottles from the garbage cans and trying to sell them for 5 cents each, okay? So the reason for that, really on both, it's Nigzar and Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. But the reason that this guy is more, this guy needs less schusim, because al piteva, he has a better way to make money. The one who's doing this stupid thing, al piteva, doesn't have a Chinaman's chance, needs even more schusim and may not have those schusim, and therefore it becomes harder. So the harder and the easier is really totally in the schusim that I have, because harder is more of a nest that I need. Easier is less of a nest. But it's all up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu again and again to repeat and remind and remember. Now here's another one, which is a very good psychological piece of Musa. Hashem has been good and compassionate to me constantly, even though I may not have deserved it. And the next one, I know that Hashem will help me now, just like He has always helped me in the past. These two points are very, very significant. Hashem has been good and compassionate to me constantly, even though I may not have deserved it. The biggest problem with bitochon is the concern that maybe I don't deserve it. The antidote to that is, and what you got until now, you did deserve. Obviously, it has nothing to do with being deserving or not. It has to do with your connection to Hashem. It has to do with Hashem's chesed. It has to do with Hashem's rachamim. Because if what I got until now, I didn't necessarily deserve, so who says I have to deserve what I'm going to get in the future? And that's a very critical point, because that's the thing that keeps us the furthest away from bitochon. I don't deserve it. How do I know if I deserve it? But you know something? Hashem, as it say, Hashem has been good and compassionate to me constantly, even though I may not have deserved it. Forget the fact when it comes to bitochon, forget what you deserve. Well, we've discussed this in a number of different ways. Forget what you deserve. Hashem is molei chesed and rachamim. And the one thing that you can certainly do is recognize that. And when you're relying and counting on Him, then the fact that you didn't deserve it sort of takes a second, a back seat. Okay, one more, and then I do have to leave. I know that Hashem will help me now, just as He has always helped me in the past. Now, this is something that's very interesting, because the truth of the matter is, how do you know? How do you know they'll help you now just as they helped you in the past? Well, you really know because of the previous piece. Because, and the Goyin, this is really from the Vilna Goyin, says it on what we say in Nishos, Adheinu Azarunu Rachamecho. That which you helped me until now was only mercy, not because I deserved it. V'lo Azavunu, and that which you didn't forsake me was Chasodecho, only kindness. V'lo Chein Anachto Betuchim, he says, therefore I can rely that you're not going to change. Because if what I earned and what I got until now was because I earned it, maybe tomorrow I don't deserve it anymore. But it has nothing to do with what I deserve, so what's the difference today and tomorrow? Hashem is always doing chesed. So, but the Goyin says that that's a way to think. A person has to look on the back and see. You know, I'm worried maybe I don't deserve it. Okay, let's take a look. Let's start from age 13, as far back to age 12. And this, and this, and this, and this, and this. I didn't deserve half these things. I didn't deserve three quarters of these things. I don't know if I deserve any of these things. And yet he does it. Well, why should he change? And now, intellectually, could be that I earned something that I deserve more, now I deserve less. But emotionally, psychologically, when I look at an undeserving chesed, it gives me the strength to believe in an undeserving chesed in the future. Because I have a picture. I have a picture. I look at all the pictures of my past. This, A, B, C, D, E, F. Now, one of them do I think I really deserve? Ah, and he still does it for you? That should give you the strength to be confident that he's going to continue. Anyway, that's the story. But what I would just suggest is that if we want to take this seriously and really want to strengthen that midah of bitochen in a real sense, then the way to do it is by this exercise that we did today, just even on these five or six points that we went through, to review them regularly, review them constantly, take a few moments when nothing is going on, when it's quiet, and just to picture, you know, run those pictures through your mind, and through that, internalize it into the heart, internalize it into the subconscious, so that these feelings become part of my being, part of my essence, part of my worldview. The male, that makes life easy.